So today we are meeting for the last class that we have. We believe this is the first time that we have done on a Sunday's the Masterworks of Modern Theosophy. We were very lucky on the 2nd. We discussed Isis. And on the 9th, we looked at the secret doctrine. Last week, we looked at the key. And today, to finish it all off, we're going to be looking at what does the voice of the silence have to say. So all these pieces of wonderful literature that Madame Blavatsky wrote during, you know, just voluminous amounts of writings that we have been very lucky to have. When we're looking at the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, we can join all of these writings into the Declaration, because one of the ideas with the Declaration, we're looking at the dissemination of these ideas. And she was able to put down in words the ancient ideas, and we have been able to receive these as an inheritance from eons back. And this, we're looking at these ideas and disseminating them as the basis for union among all theosophists, and we are worldwide. And we come together with the similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And if we look at all these writings, we can see how HPB has woven all of the ideas, this aim, purpose, and teaching, into all of her works. And anybody is welcome to our meetings, regardless of sex, creed, race, condition, or organization. We just ask that if someone wants to consider themselves as a theosophist, the main idea then is this, is an understanding and the actions of universal brotherhood as a fact in nature. And the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And our lodge here in Philadelphia, in order to fulfill the ideas in the Declaration, we offer 2 meetings a week. As now on Sundays, we are meeting. The meeting starts promptly at 11 o'clock and runs until noon. The doors open at 10:30, and there's always a book table and somebody at the book table where you can buy these wonderful writings that we've been talking about on Sundays, as well as all these other theosophical books. And on Wednesdays, we are looking at... one thing we do want to say. Next Sunday starts March, and the umbrella topic for for March is the mysteries of the mind. And we are looking at the topic is the unity and duality of mind for next Sunday. On Wednesdays, we are studying The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. The meeting starts at 7:45 and goes until 9. On Wednesday nights, the library is open from 5:30 until 7:30. And if you come in a little early and you don't have the books, you can read the assignment for that night as well as the reference that goes along with it. And it is a reference library only. We have a special meeting coming up on March 19th, Wednesday, and it's entitled A Great Theosophist. We are going to be looking at the life and works of William Q. Judge. The United Lodge is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. And people that are up on the platform, folks that are in the library, manning the library and the book table, we are all volunteers. Nobody gets paid except for what they put into it. All right, so we will be looking at the Voice of the Silence today. And the meeting will be broken up into two sections. The first part, we will be looking at just kind of an overview of how the Voice of the Silence came to be. And then the opening of the voice is the preface, which is just a wealth of information, historical information about where the voice came from and how it came to be, as we said. So, and then the second talk will be more of a spiritual nature, focusing on the writings that are in the book itself. And there are a few interesting facts about the writing of The Voice of the Silence. And the first one, it was written 2 years before HPB died. At this point, she was very sick while she was writing it. And at the same time, she was writing The Secret Doctrine and The Key. And we always wonder what incredible strength, fortitude, this woman had, being so sick, you know, close to the end of her time here on Earth. And she put together The Secret Doctrine, The Key, and The Voice, as well as starting her magazine, Lucifer. The Voice was written mostly in Fontainebleau, we're not sure about the pronunciation, in France, in 1889. And that it was the same year that it was published as well. Another interesting fact that we noticed was in the dedication page of The Voice, it simply states dedicated to the few. Whereas the dedication page in the SD, The Secret Doctrine, it's dedicated to all true theosophists, and she dedicates the key to her students. So we just kind of see a difference here. Who are the few that she mentions on the dedication page of The Voice of the Silence? And we hope that during this whole class with discussions and questions, that maybe we'll get a better idea of who those few are. And we wanted to just read from, if people haven't read her biography, it's a treasure trove of information. And this is in one of the chapters called New Books and New Places. The Voice, it seeks more to inspire than to instruct. It appeals to the heart rather than to the head. But to the literature of power, the aim of which is to move. So important is a clear understanding of this difference, not merely between the kinds of effects they are calculated to produce and organs upon which they are intended to act, that according to the Voice of the Silence itself, the disciple, at the very outset of his quest, is admonished, learn above all to separate head learning from soul wisdom, the eye from the heart doctrine. And we will be going into that idea with the next talk. During 1881, HPB was living in Tibet. And while she was in Tibet, she learned a lot more information. She was with her teacher, her master there, and she was learning Senzar as well as improving her English. And we thought that was kind of a curious thing that it was stated that she was learning her English because, you know, some of her earlier writings, it didn't seem as though she was having a problem having been born in Russia. But apparently she felt as though her English for writing these ideas needed some tune-up. So while she was there learning Senzar, she also improved on her English. And she described Senzar as the mystic name for the secret sacerdotal language or the mystery speech of the initiated adepts all over the world. And it is this language that the stanzas forming the basis of the SD, the Secret Doctrine and the Voice, were originally written. Now, the preface to the Voice of the Silence gives a thorough overview regarding the background. And she starts off by saying that the voice descends from an obligatory writing, an ancient writing, the Book of the Golden Precepts. And the Golden Precepts comes from the same group of writings that the Secret Doctrine is from. And these writings, the Golden Precepts, I mean, these are ancient, ancient writings. And they were not written down initially. People had to memorize everything when they were with their teachers. And the stanzas of Zan, the ancient wisdom, is also from the same group of writings. And that is the basis for the Secret Doctrine. The original precepts were engraved on thin oblong stones, and then when they were copied, they were copied onto discs. And the Senzar has an alphabet of its own. It's a combination of ideographs and symbols. And there are different ways. The preface goes into detail about the different ways that these ideas can be read. And they talk about numbers and colors and even astrology. And the Golden Precepts contains about 90 distinct treatises, and HPB memorized 39 of them. And we have been given the Voice of the Silence as a compilation of these 39 treatises. The rest of them, she did not translate nor give to the world because she felt as though we were not ready for it. And the voice is divided into three fragments, all having to do with the spiritual path. And its threefold aspects are truth, which is grasped by the mind, compassion, felt by the heart, and discipline or sacrifice, which is embodied by life. And the first fragment is entitled The Voice of the Silence, the second, The Two Paths, and the third, The Seven Portals. And we wanted to end with just a little interesting background that Alfred Lord Tennyson, William James, George W. Russell, otherwise known as A.E., were very much influenced by The Voice of the Silence. And on the 100th anniversary, 1989, of the book, the Dalai Lama wrote a foreword there was a special issue put out, and the Dalai Lama wrote a special foreword to it, as well as the 9th Panchen Lama also wrote a special foreword for one of the books as well. So that's just a general overview. And we will now go into the book itself.
we are somewhat elated by the idea of presenting the voice of the silence until we began studying it a little bit more. And there's really nothing that we can say that will be of any great benefit. The benefit comes from reading it. And it is a devotional book. It is much like the Bhagavad Gita, but it's just presented in another way. And we are told that it's in cipher, so that reading it, one digests the meaning, and the soul recognizes the truth. Now, we know from history that nations rise and fall. And if we look back and we look for the cause of that destruction, it goes back to the idea of knowledge and ethics. Nations are destroyed because there is an imbalance. There may be much knowledge, but no ethics. And or there be or could be much ethics and no knowledge, which is just as dangerous. Not only is this true in the outside world that we live in, and in sight of all of history, this can be seen. So what does it mean to us? It means that we are like what we see. We have to find knowledge and ethics and find that balance within our own nature, or we will destroy ourselves. So the fundamental idea is that one, to enter this path, and the path is one of spiritual, it's a spiritual journey, and it has been marked out by many, and the voice is one of those small little treaties that points out the way and tells us of the pitfalls. Now, we find that our world in which we live in is all sensory. It's feelings. It's all this external stuff in our lives, emotions and so forth. And our body is caught up in that. It reacts to that because we have always fed it this diet of sensations. So what has happened is that our mind and our heart are not stable, are not free. And it's stated that if we want to be free and find some kind of liberation, we must get knowledge. We must get knowledge of who and what we are and how we can move on with that tide of evolution. Now, when we say that, what do you mean? Well, there's a natural tide, a natural influence to ever generate a higher cause. And in fact, as we evolve back into spirit again, we have this opportunity to help on with nature. So, at the start, we have to find out what our motive is. Why do we want to have any knowledge? Why do we want to be better than everyone else? Or why do we want to be different from everyone else? And we have to find out. And We lie to ourselves all the time. And that's the hardest thing to figure out. But the truest way is to see what sensations or ideas manifest in the mind and how we react to them. So this calls for a constant vigilance of our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. And we have to ever stand in that point where we can see our actions as they are in progress, whether it is a moral action, ethical, and is it done with knowledge. And we know, but we don't want to look at that. So from the very start, we have to understand what our true motive is. But we can cultivate our motive. We can, after reading this, we can see what we can do. And it's stated very plainly, we are infinitesimal atoms in this universe. And if we do not attach ourselves to anything of eternal, everlasting reality, we dissipate with no real knowledge, with nothing. But once we consider the fact that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, that we, together, as a group, or as an individual, are strengthened by those around us. So that the ideas that we consider, those moral ideas, those ideas that will elevate us and humanity. But just by training of the mind and the motive, which is the first step, motive first, and then mind. Oftentimes when we do something, it's body first, then mind. We have to start in the mind, and we have to begin there and examine and look for those points that bring us together. But there is one grand ideal that will hurry our motive and our aspirations, and that is renunciation. That is the path of the Buddha, and we here see that that is the true path of humanity, because. Excuse me?
You were on the path of humanity.
Yes. The path of humanity is that upward spiral. And those who fight against the tide cast themselves down. And this moral compass that we are given shows us the way. Because many have done it before us. And it's the path of renunciation. Now, we have to consider that idea. We have to consider for a long time. We may even consider from one life to the next, because we have to find out what our true mission, our true purpose is. And within our motive, it is to help poor, suffering humanity. What can we do to alleviate the suffering of others? Knowledge and ethics are where we begin. Now, when you begin, we are told that there are two paths. One of liberation, one of tears and woe, or the path of woe. So we are given choices. Man has that choice. So we are given the choice between final liberation or the path of woe. So one must consider what it is that we are, what we want. What is our motive? Because if our motive is not the highest, we will crumble in defeat when we embark upon this path. Well, that as we go on and as we clean up our nature, we become in control of the body, not a slave of the body. That is what we are trying to do, trying to understand how we can progress. By running away, by this, by that? No. By knowing thyself, by knowing the workings of the mind and what we think about. The time will come when we are tired. We are seemingly worn out from the battles that we've been fighting. Because the battles, more or less, have been outside of us. The battle is not there. The battle is between our lower self, our personality, and our pure self, our spirituality. We live in a world of sense, not of soul. And that is our problem. Because we are soul beings. And when we act with a unity, we are able to elevate our own thoughts, our own feelings. Because those lower feelings are like the jackal, like the jackals. They pursue us because we have given them life, and they pursue us and pursue us. But we have to not let them control us. We need to control them. Along with that renunciation, we need to develop our knowledge, but our discrimination. That to know what it is that we should do. It says in one of the, follow the wheel of life, follow the wheel of duty to race and kin, to friend and foe, and close thy mind to pleasures as to pain. Exhaust the law of karmic retribution. Give cities for thy future birth. We want to create no new causes, but we have to aspire to tread the path of renunciation. But we create that by serving. And how we serve, that we must untangle for ourselves. But we need not to act selfishly or unselfishly, but selflessly. So we know that the mind gathers dust while it reflects. So we have to wipe away that dust, those illusions from our life, and try to live in the eternal. You know, in the world we live in now, we know our mental capacities are not linked to our moral capacities. In fact, it is discouraged. We are taught in school that this knowledge is all you need. You don't need a moral perspective. And that is left to someone else to figure out. No, it's all the same. And our education has to be of a moral and of a soul quality. And of course, the seven portals, those virtues that can transform our life. Dana, Sheila, and Kishanti. Now, love creates harmony, but not without patience. So these three are the golden triangle. And then those are our lower cities. And our higher aspect, we need to develop viraga, dispassion, detachment, and contemplation is dhyani. And prajna is true spiritual perception. But the balance principle is that of virya. It's dauntless energy. And it was mentioned by the other chair that how could HPB have all this energy? Well, it comes from her association and her strength. But her strength is of the universal. We know we haven't said everything that we could, but we'll open this up for discussion, and maybe we can find out something about ourselves.
The other student, more mentioned the idea that in the dedication, it mentions that this book is for the few. And having listened to what was just said, we're wondering, since there are many people who try to aspire after spiritual development for their own benefit or for their own reward, whether they think of it as heaven or nirvana, depending on their tradition, would the few then refer to those who renounce their own spiritual aspiration in order to be better able to help the development of others?
Yeah, the renunciation is of the spiritual nature, of the soul nature, and that this idea of the few, they're here in respect to the world out there. There are souls here that are looking for an answer, or if not an answer, a way to find the answer, an understanding of one's soul life. But we have to pay attention to the soul, or we are overtaken by our senses and we become a slave of them. Yes.
HPB gave a copy of The Voice of the Silence to Tolstoy, and she wrote in it to one of the few. And she always pointed to his compassion and charity. So perhaps that's where we need to focus, to be one of the few.
Yes, compassion and being of service. But we need to discern that for ourselves. We have to develop our discrimination. Because sometimes we hurt more than we help. Or we push someone back because they needed to struggle to find that answer. Certainly you can lend a hand or a willing ear. But it's like a gold mine. This book is a gold mine. And you have to dig to find the truth. It's sort of like in the outer world, the high ideals, you know, the church and a few ideas that we could never really digest. But the fact that we felt spiritual enough to follow the teachings of another church or another religion, when you read this book, your mind is expanded. It is not limited to that religious thought and answer. The answer is here. Yes.
Along that line, we think that a reasonable analogy to describe the voice of the silence would be that the voice of the silence is to religion as opera is to pop music. A person may have been born into this life with certain things developed within them so that they can appreciate or even sing opera, or not, but they could make the effort to develop, you know? And earlier, exactly along that line, it was said by the other student that William James wrote about the voice of the silence, and in a book called The Varieties of Religious Experience, where he was talking about all the different types of what people think is religious experience. Chapter one started out with form and dogma, those who believe that you have to go to church or there is no religion, you know? And he described all through the book, less and less and less form and dogma, more and more and more spirituality. And the final pages of the book was a description by James of the voice of the silence and those people that he talked to who are students of the voice. And what we found very interesting is that when one studies the voice, it can have the same calming effect on his heart as classical music, as just sitting and listening to classical music.
Yes, we think the analogy is quite appropriate, that the heart must be cultivated. There's a heart doctrine and a head doctrine. You must develop the heart principle, the absolute compassion we have for one another. That is what we have to cultivate. But compassion is of the heart, and it guides the mind. So, yes, the analogy is quite good.
It was mentioned that knowledge is as important as ethics. And it's interesting that each of those fragments, in its own way, contains a warning about the need for a certain kind of knowledge. As a matter of fact, the first line in the first fragment is, this is written for those ignorant of the dangers of the lower iddhi. We're just wondering a few words could be said about those lower iddhi. What are they? What are their dangers?
Well, the dangers of the lower iddhi, or that lower psychic nature that we develop, it develops with us. And that if we are looking for power and exclusiveness, somewhere to hang our hat high above all others, these lower cities, these lower impressions, begin to overtake us, and we become a slave to them. So that's why we have to become aware of that psychic nature. And it's said that once the student begins in earnest, that he is attacked by the astral sphere. He's attacked. And he has to be strong enough to fight off that attack. I think the analogy was used that, you know, someone's in the house and they're being attacked by bees. They shut the window and they can't be stung anymore. However, the window cannot always stay closed, and they will overpower us at some point. In the very back.
We were wondering, when you speak about this idea of discernment, some people are very emotional in their feelings. It's either way up or way down. For most of us, we do make a lot of judgment by our feelings, but our feelings are not, it seems, what we need to look at. So we were wondering,
we need to look at our feelings. We need to look at them and examine them. And what does that feeling arouse? What does it arouse in us? And that's what we need to pay attention to, so that when it is aroused again, we know what it is. And we begin to gain more and more control. Our personality is not going to give up anything easily, because it's been running the show, which is, go nuts, guys. And that's basically where we are. The rider on the horse is not paying attention to the horse. that we need to see ourselves in the perspective of everything else, that we're not separate from anything. And once we can realize that, there is great strength in unity, great strength. And that is how we help others. And in fact, we are told that when we read these books that are the words of the masters, we are drawn closer to them. They cannot come to us. We have to make the effort to go to them. And this little book will send us on that journey. Yes?
Well, it's strange. We were just thinking, when you go to the public library, the big sign, quiet, please, no talking. And it's very quiet in there. Well, we assumed that we came there to get a book to read. And you can't have a band playing and a lot of noise while you're reading. Some can do that. And there's a point to consider that in the midst of all the noise that's around us, we can be quiet. So it appears that she wrote that book not for reading, but for consideration. And then she says a few, in the world at that time, there was so much turmoil. And of course, the poor working man didn't have the time or the energy to do it. But there were a few.
Well, there have always been a few. And they are the ones that become the companions of those masters. And the work that is done on this plane is to try to make the mass of humanity more moral, more ethical, and giving them knowledge. We are not this body. We are not. We are not these senses, these feelings. We are not. What we are is a light unto the world, and that with our knowledge we protect that light. We keep it burning because we know more and more of that soul nature is where we need to live. Now, in the very back.
In this waking state, in the condition of this plane, we're fortunate if we can hear conscience, if we can keep in touch with that moral yardstick that sometimes hits us and says, no, this isn't the thing to be done. In terms of the voice of the silence, are there higher aspects to the conscience that might come through in other states of consciousness, like deep sleep? So does this little book help us examine our conscience here and become more and more aware that there is something higher and more universal?
Yeah. Yes. Yes to that. And that the ideas that are found here, your rational mind will go, what? I don't understand this. What are they talking about? What does it mean? But it's not talking to this physical man. It's talking to this spiritual man. That the world in which we live, we know all about. But we know very little about our soul nature. And that's where we live. I mean, that's where we need to live. Because once we can make that link, life after life after life, of working things out and trying to be better fit to help and teach others. It can't be in one life, but it could be in one life. It's a struggle that if mankind knew who they were and believed that they had these powers, they wouldn't fight with each other. Why would you fight with yourself? And that the conflict that is imposed outwardly by our nations, by ourselves, is nothing but feelings that we have not conquered and that have controlled us. So we need to control our thoughts, our words, our feelings. Now, you're not going to, that's something that is aspired to. And the only way you can do that is by seeing them in the light of the higher self. You need to examine ourselves in every corner of our being. We can't hide from that because we have lied to ourselves most of our life. That we really want to just feel good. We want to be happy. We don't want misery. We don't want suffering. We don't want confusion. We don't want drama. You know? But those things are what many call us, call human. It's not human. Well, it's human because it's in the human kingdom, but that aspect of humanity that is divine isn't touched on, or only little at a time, in the very back.
The three earlier books by HPB give us a vocabulary, a history, all this knowledge of things we couldn't even imagine. But the last book, The Voice, gives us a guide to do exactly what you're saying. The rest of it is theory. The voice becomes, this is how you practice.
Yeah, it is. I think that's why for many years, a lot of us did not want to read it. Or when we read it, we just read it on the superficial stage of our being. We didn't look or we didn't try to digest it because the personality doesn't want any part of this book. No part. Because we are the slaves to that personality. And as long as it stays in control, it's happy. But it's our destruction. By living in this world, we are fraught with attachments. Yes, sir.
I was just wondering, you said about the knowledge in the book. I was wondering, where did it come from, and can I get it without me reading the book?
And where does this information come from, and can
where,
you...
Where does she get it from, and can one, not me particularly, get it without reading the book? Is this...
Without reading the book, can one gain this? Well, in rounds to come, it will be more and more apparent what this book means. And when you will feel it, or if not, you'll be cast back. You won't be able to move any further. Because the evolution of the human being is upward. And that spiraling upward, each time we come back, it's a little different. There's more, because the earth has now moved into new space. The sun has now moved into new space. And we are being traversed through the universe. So there's many influences. But one must study. Study to the sense of, no, by reading this book, that is the study. And it doesn't, you don't have to make it difficult. You're not being tested. It's not right or wrong what you do. It's what you decide to do. That's what each of us decides to do. And you will derive as much benefit from anything. It's determined by the energy and the single-mindedness that one puts in to that idea. Behind you, yeah.
Earlier it was said something along the lines of reach out to masters because they will not reach down to us. And it was also said by the previous speaker something along the lines of, you know, the source is so ancient and senzar and all this. For, you know, how does a person not familiar with these ideas really understand that? What does it mean by we have to reach out to masters? What do we really mean by that?
Well, this is the idea of study and knowledge. We have all this knowledge within us. We have it, but we don't pay attention to it. And we don't, there's a way of nurturing it out. It's by reading devotional books. It's by cleaning our mind and putting those ideas in it. It's said that one of the greatest problems with humanity or with people in general is that they try to make their mind blank and empty. That does not bring the mind or bring that spiritual knowledge out. Yes, go ahead.
Regarding the previous question about does one have to read the book, it brought up to the mind perhaps when we leave here, we get a call, we're supposed to go to some place, we're given the address. Well, we might eventually find it. Philadelphia is not that large. But it certainly helps if we have a map or directions. We get there better with avoiding a lot of the detours and potholes.
Yes.
It's the same way. This is a path that's been traveled for ages, and we might say we have the accumulated experience of those who succeeded at it, who put it forth as a map, as a guide. That's all it is. We still have to travel the path. We still have to find the voice of the silence within us. But at least we have the experience of those who have gone before.
Yes, and they're like a little signpost along the way that we may have left a few there ourselves. And when we come to them, we are reawakened by the virtue or the power of that idea. So this, the act of the silence in our very being, when we have quieted the heart, the mind is able to become single-pointed on that soul knowledge. So, yes, in the very back.
Is the voice of the silence the same as the voice of conscience? Because we think that we hear the voice of conscience already, so is it something more, or is it the same or similar, or just a higher level of conscience?
Well, we know that conscience, or conscience, is that small voice within us that if we haven't crushed it out by now, we are told to nurture it, to check, test it, and verify it. What does our conscience say? You know, is that really what you're going to do? Are you that selfish? And sometimes we feel regret. Sometimes we feel upset because our intentions were one thing, but what happened was something other than what we wished for. I think Mr. Crosby says that a man's life is filled with good intentions, but there's not that could be. How does that go again? But those, well, I forgot what I was saying. In the back.
Well, just that the voice of conscience seems to be our own experience from past lives where we've digested something, whereas the voice of the silence is the universal call, let's say, from universal mind. It is the same for all of us if we would listen. But we were thinking, you don't have to become a heavy student of the voice of the silence. just wake up in the morning and say, I'm a spiritual being and I need help, and then read a couple of lines from it and live out your day. Keep doing that, and pretty soon you are on that path.
Yes, that's a very practical hint. And that is what we would call making theosophy a living power in our life. This book is good to read, but it is nothing if it is not practiced. So we need, if we understand these ideas, how could we make them real in our life? That is one of our tasks.
What's the difference between book learning and the study of these few sentences in a very small book that we may read a thousand times and say, well, I can memorize this? What is the difference? It seems that we have to consider what is knowledge and which is book learning. And many of us have book learning.
Well, that goes back to the statement of making theosophy a living power in your life. You can have book learning, but if you don't have an application of that, it means nothing, because it will pass away with the body. But if we tie it together in our very being, that we actually raise ourselves up, and in so doing, we raise all the kingdoms below us. And it says in, I'm sure it's here, but the nature thrills at the fact of another arhat, or a perfected being, has entered this world. So to tread this path is one of difficulty. And if we don't want, we say the path of renunciation is too difficult, I can't do it. Well, there's the path of liberation. And we can be liberated from this world. We can reach nirvana and hold out there for a few cycles, a few manvantras, or even one. But we will be spit back into life again. But if one partakes of that nirmanakaya, that life of renunciation and service of humanity, that is the highest ideal of mankind. Renunciation. And it means nothing if one does not attempt it. And by attempting it, you see in your mind what, first of all, what it is that's driving me. What sense impressions am I in control of? And you begin there. And there's no goal other than one that you set. But the more one endeavors and contemplation and to see oneself as they truly are, then the world becomes the truth, because we see it for what it is. But that could be in one life, but that could be many lives of turmoil and search. But we need to begin wherever we are. Well, our time has come to an end. We would like to remind you that all activities in this lodge are done on a voluntary basis of time, service, and money. And all are welcome to participate. Have a good day. Go get her.
Very good. Even if